Welcome to our second installment of our series on knowing your commentators, the Ramban versus Ibn Ezra. A series was originally given at the Shabbos afternoon class at Baron Hirsch. We thank our sponsors, Karen and Barney Abbas, who have sponsored this series, memory of their parents, Miriam and Harry Cooper. May the memories be a blessing. So we look at Ramban versus Ibn Ezra. Firstly, let's look at it. Comment by Professor Bernard Septimus, someone I grew up in Far Rockaway with his family. He was from Harvard University. And he says, look, big difference between Ramban and Ibn Ezra is that Ramban went beyond the consecutive grammatical exegesis of individual words and phrases to a more organic conceptual structure approach. Whereas Ibn Ezra was part of the great tradition of Andalusia, of the southern Spain, where the Muslims reigned, where there was great intellectual fervor. People like the Rambam came out of there, great grammarians, great Talmudists. They were very broad. And one of their great foci was grammar, syntax, language, poetry. So that's what the Ibn Ezra is all about. But the Ramban, who was trying to continue the Spanish legacy. He's very adamant about his love of the Spanish legacy as opposed to other traditions. But he doesn't, as a Catalonian, as someone from Girona, from near Barcelona, he is less interested in simply grammatical exegesis, but rather to look at a more organic, conceptual, structural approach. How do we know that Ramban is interested in general structure, not just the narrow meaning of each text? Well, for example, the notion that he has an introduction to each book where he lays out what is the purpose of this book. For instance, the notion in the book of Exodus that it's not just why is there all this talk about the Exodus, but then all of a sudden the end of the book is all about the tabernacle. What does that got to do with the Exodus? Is it a book of Exodus? Is that the name of the book? He says, no, it's a book of redemption. What does the temple have to do with redemption? The answer is that you can't reach the level of the forefathers to be like the book of Genesis, where you had all these great prophetic figures of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You can't be like that, and you haven't been fully redeemed until you have God in your midst and you have the full prophecy coming from that temple. And Jewish people reached a level where they could achieve prophecy through that temple. So the great inspiration, the presence of the Shekhinah. So the Ramban is looking at more broad questions than simply, what does this verse mean? Also, the fact that Ramban, as opposed to Ibn Ezra, as opposed to the Rashi, is not interested in changing the order of the text. Yes, occasionally the Torah speaks out of order. In the Book of Numbers, there are things that are earlier that happen later, fine. But where it's not necessary, Ramban refuses to move the order around. Whether it's in the beginning of Jethro, the story of Yitro, it seems to take place before Mount Sinai, whether it's the story of the tabernacle taking place before the binding, before the golden calf, the Ramban believes that things should be read in order. He's looking at the general structure. Now then, the rest of our discussion is Ramban's attitude toward Ibn Ezra. The Ramban famously describes in his introduction to the entire Torah, Ramban describes his relationship to Ibn Ezra. And we have to understand, Ramban lays out that, look, I'm going to sit here, I'm going to explain, I'm going to comment on Rashi. I love Rashi, and we're going to have a conversation with Rashi. And then we're going to talk about the Ibn Ezra, we're going to critique him. And then sometimes he likes to go against the Rambam in his Guides to the Perplexed. That's the program of what the Ramban sets out to do. In many ways, he's also interested, as he does bring the Midrashim, to figure out which Midrash is more acceptable in the simple reading of the text and which Midrash is actually following the Halakha and how the Midrash can somehow fit in to the simple reading as well, to try to bring the Midrash and the simple reading together, as Rashi kind of had them in opposition to each other. And Rashi thought you could use a midrash when it answers simple questions in the text, but Ramban is going a step further. He says, if you look at the deeper meaning of what the text is trying to say, sometimes the midrash can get to the simpler, deeper meaning of the text. So let's read what the Ramban writes about his relationship to Rashi and Ibn Ezra. And this is interesting culturally, because you got France up here and Germany, where Rashi is from. Rashi studied in Germany, and their community, which is very conservative, they just study Torah and that's it. And then you have the Andalusia, the Ibn Ezra tradition from southern Spain, which is very radical. That they're studying philosophy and grammar, and they're very broad. And then you have Ramban in the middle, where he has this new community, relatively new community, in Girona and around Barcelona. And how do they feel about things? Are they more conservative, like people up north, who are against the Rambam and his philosophy? Or are they more like the people in the south who love philosophy and are interested in radical ideas and things like that? So the question of Ramban's attitude to Ibn Ezra will tell us where he fits on the spectrum between radical southern Spain, Andalusia, and a conservative northern Jewry in France and Spain and Germany. Ramban writes as follows, his introduction to the Torah. He says, Perush Rabbein Shmuel, Teret Tzvi, Tzvirat Tifara. The commentary of Rashi is so beautiful, even though he argues on it all the time. He adorns his commentary with Mishnah and Gemara and all the wonderful things. Lo Mishpat HaBechorah. He is the firstborn of all commentators. He's the first. I will dwell on his commentary. I'll meditate on his commentary. With his love, I will engage. Ipshatav midrashav, with the simple meaning, with midrash, and every agadah. And Im Avraham ibn Ezra, however, with Ibn Ezra, tielam mitochacha megula, ava b'sutara. He says, with Ibn Ezra, we're going to have an open rebuke. I'm going to go after him strong. But underneath it all, I have his hidden love. And that's the topic of the rest of our discussion, is to what extent did he have a hidden love? To what extent did he have an open rebuke? To what extent was he really with Ibn Ezra or against him? So let's see. Firstly, there's a wonderful teacher in Israel known as Miriam Sklarz. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. Sklarz. Sklarz, I'm not sure. In Hebrew, it might be a little different. And she teaches the Orot. I thank her for her articles about these things. And she says that 90% of the time, Ramban quotes Ibn Ezra, he disagrees with Ibn Ezra. In other words, his whole point in quoting Ibn Ezra is to critique him. So there's a very strong program of going against Ibn Ezra. That might give you the impression that basically it's an open rebuke. It's open as an open shooting season against Ibn Ezra, not so much love. However, she says, it's interesting. She counted in Genesis that there were 60 times that he agreed with Ibn Ezra, but doesn't quote him. As my son Asher pointed out, that's the hidden love. And I'm not telling you that 60 times in Genesis, I'm actually quoting him. I actually agree with him. But then I'm not interested. I'm not going to quote him. He's more interested in quoting him to rebuke him. But as far as agreeing with him, many times the interpretation that the Ramban prefers, that's what Ibn Ezra said. But he's saying it as his own commentary. So we say, you know, if he has so much rebuke and so much disdain for Ibn Ezra, how come 60 times in Genesis he actually agrees with Ibn Ezra, and he presented it as his interpretation. Now, when we say that he has an open rebuke, we don't just mean that he disagrees with him. He often speaks very harshly against him. And when he spoke against his Talmudic antagonist, Rabbi Yitzhak Halevi, he also speaks harshly. In fact, his name of his commentary on the Rif is Milchamot Hashem, the wars of God against this Provençal rabbi known as Rabbi Yitzhak Halevi. He says, so for instance, some of the very harsh language he uses against them as follows. He says, that he has left his simple reading of the text, and now he went on to prophesy falsely. That was not only, he calls him a false prophet. He says, you're just making things up. Or he says, you think Nimrod was a good guy? Because it says he was a hero before God. So the rabbis say, no, he was an idol worshiper, but Ibn Ezra thinks he was a good man. He says, "Atah matzdik rasha, you're making a rasha, a wicked man, into a righteous person. You can't do that. The rabbis have a Kabbalah, they have a tradition that Nimrod is a bad guy. How could you do that? What are you doing?" Third case. He says, you think Yitzchak became poor when he grew up? You think when he got old, You think God would make Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob poor? We know they were very wealthy. They were always wealthy. God blessed them. You think all of a sudden he became poor, and he was so poor, and he loved Esau, so he would feed him. You think he couldn't even feed himself? He says he mishtabish mode. Here, Rabbi Avram, he always calls him Rabbi Avram, which he wasn't really a rabbi. Was Ibn Ezra a rabbi? He wasn't really a Talmudist. So I don't know if he's just calling him rabbi almost in jest. Anyway, he's making all kinds of errors over here. Ma'od, very much so. Ani tama, and I wonder, mi iver in esi chlobazen. We're talking to the blind Isaac at the end of his life. Who made Ibn Ezra so blind in this question? His very wise eyes. Well, Ibn Ezra's a very wise man, says the Ramban. But since he has such seichel, such a wise man, who made his eyes so blind? His intelligent eyes so blind. So it's a little bit of a pun. The Ramban is great with a twist of a phrase, and he's wondering who made the Ibn Ezra blind, not the not Yitzchak. Or here's a very radical case. The notion of the purity of the biblical text, and the biblical text is accurate, is very very basic rabbinic belief. And the Ibn Ezra sometimes hints that maybe he's got questions about this. And regarding, there's some vessels. There's a holy table in the tabernacle and in the Beis HaMikdash. And on the holy table, you put the showbread, and there are certain vessels you use for it. In describing those vessels in the Torah, and then describing the book of Chronicles or Divrei Yamim, the last book of the Tanakh, there's different vessels. So he says there's kind of a shibush. There's a little bit of a mistake there in Divrei Yamim because they're using the wrong vessels. So comes the Ramban, he says, Hashibush with Divrei Rabbi Avram. You know where there's an error? Not in the book of Chronicles. There's a book, there's an error in your book. There's an error with you, Ibn Ezra. You're the one who's making errors. The text is not talking about the vessels of the table. They're talking about the vessels, they're talking about a lot of different things. And they mention the table, and then they mention the vessels. Those vessels are for the table and also for other things. So it doesn't have to be the same vessels that we mentioned in the Torah. Number five. We don't have the Ramban's commentary on the book of Judges, but the book of Judges comes up because in the end of Leviticus, it says that anyone who makes a cherem, who says this item is banned, so shall die, even among people. So it makes it sound like maybe Jephthah could have killed his daughter because he vowed her to God. So he says, don't be seduced with the nothingness of Rabbi Avram. These are words of wind. Because the he thinks that the daughter of Jephthah, of Yiftach, was made into some sort of a monk or a nun, and that's what he says. You can't vow that guy has to become a nun. You can't do that, says Ramban. Halachically, you can't. So he thinks that these are words of wind. They're a common medieval critique of different rabbis, that what someone said is a bunch of wind, an allusion to the Song of Songs and Havel Havelin of nothingness. So Ramban is very critical. His language is sometimes very harsh against Ibn Ezra, with the tongue and a little bit of tongue in cheek, where the love can be seen there. So you say, oh, so basically he's against him. 90% of the time he quotes him, he's against him. He uses very harsh language against him. So if you had to balance, is he more loving or rebuking? He's more rebuking. However, sometimes the Ramban is very complimentary to the Ibn Ezra. There are many citations in Genesis 11. He says that he said beautifully. In Genesis 31, he says it's correct. In another case, 35, 11, 45, 40, verse 5, he says, it's correct. In Numbers 12, 6, he says, it's yafet. It goes on and on. He said a lot of times that he explained it nicely. He spoke properly. He said it well. It's correct. Many times he says he does compliment the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra had a fight against the Karaites in his time, and Ramban says, oh, good job, I agree with you. Great job. But as Mrs. Sklar's, Miriam Sklar's pointed out, When it came to ideas that were just a little bit too goofy, too radical, the Ibn Ezra, the Ramban disagrees with him. However, if you so for instance, the in Exodus, the Ibn Ezra thinks that some of the Jews, even at Mount Sinai, were questioning God. He says, "What do you mean that the Jews were accepting God at that point?" With the how did the Jews make the golden calf? Was it with witchcraft? That's the Ibn Ezra, using the constellations, because Ibn Ezra was a big what do they call that, astrologist? Or no, the Ramban is a mystic, so he said no, they must have used mysticism to make the golden calf. Okay, difference of a philosophy there, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a miracle about that the clothing of the people in the desert didn't wear out. So the Ibn Ezra tries to make a natural thing about it. Since they were eating man, and from the man, you don't sweat. So if you don't sweat, your shoes don't wear out. So Ramban says, don't try to give these naturalistic explanations. It's a miracle. It's a miracle, period. So there's a different attitude towards certain things. Ramban is a more pietistic attitude, more classic religious attitude that would be more in sync with the ideas of rabbis today. Traditional rabbis. But what was Ibn Ezra's attitude toward Midrash? So, well, and what about the Ramban? So the Ramban said when he was arguing with the Christians, he had a public debate. He was forced to debate publicly against Pablo Christianity about the different within different apostates about the Talmud. So they said, "What about this Midrash?" So he said, "Look, the Haggadah, whether it's stories in the Talmud or the Midrash, it's not binding." The question is, did Ramban believe that? When you say something in a Christian dialogue, maybe when you're up against the wall, you say, "Oh, that verse, that book, we don't believe in that book." That's a good way of getting out of something in a debate, but does he really believe it? Ibn Ezra says, "Look, as regarding every Midrash, if it's a tradition, I accept it. I'm a religious Jew. I accept all traditions. But if it's just a theory the Midrash had, I have a different theory." The Ramban sometimes does also seem to downplay Agadah, but so it's hard to say. The Ibn Ezra, for instance, says that that there's that you know the Midrash that 1 in 500 people went out of Egypt, that there were really millions of Jews in Egypt, and only 1 out of 500 came out. So he says, "Look, that there are other opinions in the Midrash, 1 of 50, 1 of 5. Let's not get involved in this. The Muslims are going to make fun of us if we say this. Let's not say that Midrash." So the Ibn Ezra, rejects Midrashim that are problematic. In general, Ibn Ezra, as Miriam Scholars points out, the Ibn Ezra has 4 or 5 things that he uses to reject Midrash. Sometimes he'll say, "Look, there is a Midrash like that, but only one rabbi said that. There were other rabbis. We're going to follow those people." Sometimes he says, "Look, that's not a serious Midrash. They're just saying that there's an idea out there, and you could link it to this verse, but you don't have to. It's called Asmachta." Number three, it's just Derech Haggadah. That's a Derech Drash. It's just a Drash. Number four, he's, "Oh, it's a secret. Now it's not the Midrash, what you think it says. There's a deeper meaning. It's a secret." And sometimes he says, "It's a svara. It's not a Kabbalah. It's just an opinion of the rabbis. It's not a tradition of the rabbis." Miriam Sklar proves that to some extent, the Ibn Ezra, the Ramban, adopts all these different approaches to Midrash himself. So if you think that he mostly is a rebuker of the Ibn Ezra, not true. Ramban, the Ibn Ezra's main methods for rejecting Midrash are adopted by the Ramban. However, there's a little bit of a difference. It's true the Ramban rejects minority opinions. For instance, Sheir Ksus and Ona, the obligations of a man to a woman, he thinks Rashi is using a minority opinion to explain it. He's against it. The Ramban will sometimes say that something in his in Asmachta, fine. But the Ramban often says that even when the rabbis are making a midrash that doesn't, that even they themselves know is not the simple meaning of the text, but he always believes that there is a deeper meaning to it. When the rabbis say, oh, it says you should rest on the Shabbos, so the rest means even the things the rabbis say, you should do that too. So Ramban says, yes, how can the Torah be alluding to something rabbinic? He says, look, yes, there is a broader concept of Shabbaton, broader than simply the 39 things you're not allowed to do. And the rabbis are some of the people who fleshed out what that looks like. So the Ramban often believes that rabbinic enactments are a reflection of the deeper meaning of the text. So Ramban tries to justify and squeeze in the Midrashim at a deeper meaning. So Ramban doesn't always just reject something because it's not the simple meaning. Even the Midrashim that are not the simple meaning, often at some level they are the meaning of the text at some mystical level or at some deeper level of thinking. The Ramban will sometimes quote the Midrash, and he goes a deep step further. They said that happy cursed is someone who doesn't hold up the Torah. That's actually referring to the Hagbah that we do in the shul today. He doesn't have a problem with it. So sometimes the Ramban does adopt Midrashim more than the Ibn Ezra would, but in general, yes, sometimes he'll say it's just a Midrash, and we don't accept it. They both believe that sometimes there are secrets, but the secret of the Ibn Ezra will tend to be astrological or philosophical or maybe a textual problem. And the secrets of the Ramban will tend to be Kabbalistic. So there's a big difference there. But he does say sometimes, oh, it's this Midrash is a secret. Ramban also rejects certain things because it's just the logic. It's not a tradition. He does say that. Summarizing, Miriam Sklar says as follows. Most of the principles of Ibn Ezra were adopted by Ramban despite their free spirit, but it was that free spirit which led him to fight the Ibn Ezra. In other words, he agreed with certain free spirit things. He sort of had certain liberal tendencies like these Southern Andalusian people, but to the extent that they were too free-willed and too free in their thinking, he objected to it. And she also says, it may be said that the debate between the two is about the details, not the fundamental. The reader of the Ramban will consistently confront the rebuke of Ibn Ezra. You're always going to find the rebuke of Ibn Ezra. But from her discussions, it is clear that the Ramban's critique of Midrash and the many ways he connects it to Pshat were in many ways established by the Ibn Ezra. The Ramban's own principles of what to interpret and what not were established by the Ibn Ezra. He uses him, and that's the hidden love. And she believes that the hidden love overcame the open rebuke, that actually there's more hidden love than there is open rebuke. Finally, I think this discussion places Ramban in the middle, as often he was in the middle. He wasn't with the North in condemning the Ramban for his philosophy, but he wasn't with the South for totally accepting everything he said either. He's in the middle. He believes in tradition, innovation, and somewhere in the middle. Simple meaning of the text, yes. Rejecting certain Midrash, certain reasons, yes. But also deepening our appreciation for Midrash, realizing how it could be an even deeper interpretation of the simple meaning of the text, that it can coexist with the simple meaning of the text, and trying to bring the Midrash into the level of the rational and the simple and the mystical. So in that way, Ramban straddles between Rashi of Ashkenaz and the conservatism and the Ibn Ezra, the radicalism of Andalusia, of Southern Spain. And in that way, he's able to preserve the Southern Spanish tradition, Rashi's innovative approach, and find somehow a middle bridge between them. He often played that role in many of his writings, many of his activities. That's our story for today. Thank you for joining us here, Baron Hirsch Congregation. Join us each week for a discussion of Parsha and the holidays. Thanks to Jason Lefkowitz, our producer. Thank you.